Radio here at WHPC 90.3 FM.
Am I on now?
You're on now.
I am on
wow,
now.
Wow, I think I was on the whole
Heidi
time.
Heidi was on first because she looked like the boss today. I'm sorry.
You know, sometimes I hear myself in my headphones and other times I don't. So I just kept talking. I'll repeat what I said off mic now on mic. Hi, everybody. How y'all doing?
Hi,
hello,
Tom.
And
everybody.
Welcome to American Hit Radio here on WHPC 90.3 FM. We're here every Wednesday at 5:02. And in Mike's case.
And hey.
And Friday as well, of course, between 5 and 6 p.m. Doing what we do. I've got my lovely bride, Heidi Morales Ryan, here with me.
I'm here. I'm the boss. Yeah.
And your microphone is working, I notice. Mike is giving you preferential treatment.
That's what it is. You know why? Because I was talking when we were coming on air already, yeah. And he just wanted to get me straight on the mic.
Well, you guys sound alike.
Especially after last week.
Right. My deep, burly voice.
I don't know if anybody heard that show.
Hi,
on Friday.
I'm Heidi.
Yeah. Last week we were a little bit late and we had a couple of stand-ins and it was very
due
funny.
To the
we had
flooding.
Steve.
I felt
Steve.
Bad too because I had called in and they were like, "That looks like Tom's not going to make it," and I was late, so I'm like, I turn around. Next thing I know, you're in like, welcome, and I'm like, oh, they made it. I felt bad.
It was wild, but it was very funny hearing Steve Pellegrino say, "I know I'm Heidi Morales Ryan."
That was great. That was classic.
Anyway, since I'm on previous shows, I could mention if you're interested in hearing some of our crazier moments or previous shows, you can find them on the web. You can go to shutupandlisten.com. That show is up right now, in fact, from last Friday. It's our Beach Boys. It's the second of our Beach Boys from our Beach Boys series. And that is like actually probably the very first show you'd see if you went to shutupandlisten.com at the top of the list. That's S-H-A-D-D-U-P.
Mm-hmm. La lista listen. Gigante.
Yes, there's a ton of stuff there, including some stuff of Michael's band. Mike's band is in there, Family Lumber.
I actually have some stuff to give you today to post up.
Great. I fixed your links, too. I know that should be working now. I know
hot
you've got
links.
I don't know. I checked them, but all right.
I played them.
Oh, okay.
I clicked on them and I played them, so I'm like, they should be working.
Well, I actually really appreciate that you did that for me because
I'm more than happy to. I just hope that, you know. And we have gotten some feedback already, so that's good.
That's awesome.
People
that's
hearing
great.
That. You check it out. It's good stuff. It really is. The band is good. The tunes are great.
We're getting better and better.
Like our radio show.
We're already there.
Yeah, actually, we are. We are already there. We're getting to back to what we've always done today, which is to look at the hit singles of a specific era. Usually one which corresponds in terms of like decades with where we are now. That's we've been spending so much time on the Summer of Love in the earlier part of the summer, but we got really sidetracked because the Dylan shows were so long and there were so many of them, and there were a few things
now
that we had
to play catch up.
Now we have to play catch up a little bit. So I want to go back to like the latter part of the Summer of Love because there's some great singles that came
where are
out.
Are we going to be in August now?
Actually, yes. We're going to be looking at August as it bleeds into September, so that means next week we'll be able to catch up and pretty much be exactly, well, I can't say contemporary, but at that exact 40-year mark.
Okay.
And right now, let's take a look at some of the bigger hits from August into September of 1967, the last half of the Summer of Love. Our first up is by the Box Tops. Here's the letter.
got time to take a fast train. The only days are gone, I'm a going home. My baby just don't put me a letter. My baby just don't put me a letter.
Short and sweet. That was one of my favorite singles by
Alex
far.
Chilton, right?
Alex Chilton singing there in something that was not his natural voice, although we didn't know that at the time. You see, in 1967, The Letter was the very first time any of us would have heard The Box Tops, certainly on a national level, since it was their first single. And since they really weren't even well-known locally, there were a bunch of kids that were hanging out around the studio, and producers like Dan Penn, who's one of my songwriter heroes, were basically trying to find acts who they could, you know, who they thought that they would be able to utilize for some of the songs that they had around. The Letter was one of those songs, and it sounds to me, and of course I don't know this firsthand because I wasn't there, but I know what Dan Penn sounds like, and I get the feeling that Dan Penn sang the demo.
Ah, and he mimicked it.
Alex Chilton heard Dan Penn's voice exactly right, Heidi. He just basically wanted to sound like Dan Penn because he has a really high voice. When, you know, most of the time you hear
Alex Chilton,
if you listen to any of his songs.
I was talking to him at the House of Blues, you know, when we were down there at Jazz Fest. Oh, his voice is not so high anymore.
Well, now that he's 60, I guess. He's probably about 60.
Good.
And so I'm sure that has a big part of it. But, I mean, this is a guy whose band was Big Star. And all the songs that he sang in Big Star sounds very, you know, he's a high tenor.
Uh-huh.
When he's singing his own material. But here with The Box Tops, he's got that really gruff thing that he...
Yeah, that husky
that he adds
thing
into
that
his voice.
Conjuring up.
On a personal level, I do remember, like I said, though, I remember this song so well. I was a little kid. I was about 8 years old during the Summer of Love. Not really a hippie, but I knew what was going on. I was an aspiring hippie, really. I wanted to be a hippie, but I liked the Monkees a little bit too much to be a real hippie. And I had all the Monkees albums, but when The Letter came out...
But you had some love beads, honey.
Boy, I loved that record. I went out and I bought it at... That was when you could buy records, 45 RPM singles, at the stationery store. You'd go to, like, the stationery store, and behind the counter where they had all the candy and the gum laid out in front of you, they'd have these, like I guess what you'd find in, like, a post office box, like little slots.
Uh-huh.
And they'd have numbers 1 through 40, and whatever number the single was that week, they put the singles in that number.
Oh, cool.
That's cool.
And you'd look at the, and they'd have the Billboard Top 40 printed right there, for, you know, at a height where a kid could see it or whatever. And you'd say, oh, you know, there it is. You know, The Letter, at the time, it might have been number 12. I want one copy of number 12, please. And they'd pull it out, 79 cents. You know, you'd buy it and you'd probably have
getting,
a little...
You're getting giddy right now.
I loved buying music like that.
That is really cool, though.
That was like the coolest... The thing, something about that was made music so tangible and real. You'd hear a song and you'd go out to buy it and
you'd... get that and a couple of Jolly Ranchers and you're set.
Yeah, that's what it was like to be a kid. Or, you know, in my instance, I'd skip the Jolly Ranchers and I'd get another single. You know, I'd buy as many 45s as I could. And I'd bring them back and I had something. It wasn't a close-end play, but it was like a close-end play. You know, just a portable 45. RPM record player that my parents, you know, my parents had it in the basement, but I went to hang out in the basement because I'm a kid. That was where I could have my own space. And I set it up with all these Christmas lights so it would be dark and a color
disco.
Wheel. And I'd play my 45s on this thing. And
you're
remember
a psychedelic moment.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. You know, the wannabe hippie at 8. And I remember playing that song. I must have played it 50 times in a row. And you could do that in about an hour, because that song's about a minute 30 seconds long.
Right?
It's a really short song.
So cool.
Your mom was probably so glad you were in the basement. They never complained, I'm sure.
Without even seeing it, and it's never written in front of me, I know that that was on a Mala Records and had a blue label.
Wow.
And I don't even remember the flip side, because it was irrelevant to me. If I thought
really?
About it.
Really? You never even looked? Really?
No, it would come to me, but at the time, I don't remember it offhand. Not Soul Deep. I wish I could remember what it was. Early Times. I think that was the name of the song.
Oh, isn't that a liquor?
Yeah, but I wasn't thinking that at the time.
Well, I'm sure you weren't, but maybe Alex was.
Anyway, that's just my own personal stuff. But I mean, I guess playing the old stuff sometimes, I have to do that from time to time because I flash back on these things. Here's another song. This was a number two hit during the Summer of Love. I don't remember buying this one, but I remember hearing it on the radio and liking it. The Supremes. They're not Diana Ross and the Supremes yet.
No.
They're still being referred to as the Supremes on the label. Diana wasn't getting top billing yet. One of their better hits, I think. All the good stuff came out in the Summer of Love. Here's Reflections. Supremes, of course, with Reflections, with their easily their most psychedelic single.
Yeah,
you could tell
that
they were they jumping on a bandwagon? Would you say, or were they, but I guess everybody was.
Yeah, I mean, they were a product of their whatever their studio wanted them to put out, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so, like everything else. I mean, I think what was happening, of course, psychedelic music was becoming popular.
But at the age of two, for me, it was working.
That's how old you were then?
Yes.
Yeah, something like I say, some of the stuff snuck past me and other things sunk in really deep and hard. And that one I was aware of. But a lot of the funkier stuff I missed at the time. In fact, some of that's coming up right now. The next track I want to play is one of those funky tracks. Aretha Franklin, who had already hit huge in 66, really, with Respect, of course, and I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You. Second album came out called Aretha Arrives. It did not have the same impact as her first album, but the singles were still totally great. This one, I think, might have suffered because of the name. The track is called Baby, I Love You. And when you hear Baby, I Love You, most people are thinking of the Phil Spector track, probably.
Mm.
You know, I think it was the Ronettes. And it suffered for that. It didn't have an original enough title. But when the track starts, you're like, oh, that's what this is. Of course, another fabulous Aretha Franklin single with the unfortunate name of Baby, I Love You.
If you want my loving,
All right, Baby, I Love You from Aretha Arrives. She had actually, she arrived well before the album Aretha Arrives, though, to be quite honest. That was the name of her second album.
I was going
to
say.
But the fact of the matter is that she was already on Columbia Records before that for 10 years. But she was not a significant household name. She was singing jazz standards, and they really tried to turn her into a sort of like a Johnny Mathis type of character. Mm-hmm. In terms of like being like
the female
aiming for
version.
the adult contemporary type older audience sort of a thing that they were trying to shoot for 10 years with Aretha, and that wasn't working, and Columbia eventually just gave up on her, and then Atlantic picked her up, and Atlantic had the intelligence to put her in her natural environment.
Yeah, I think a lot of record companies were trying to mold and package their black or African American artists, as we say today, but sending them to etiquette school and things like that, and
certainly
trying
the case
to make
in Motown.
People, you know, present them in a certain way.
Right, basically trying to paint them into something that they might not necessarily be. But once Aretha was able to like be herself,
she had such a full gospel background too.
Yeah, exactly. Her father was one of the most famous ministers in the country. So when Aretha was able to suddenly just be Aretha, she instantly became a huge success. Atlantic had the biggest star that they've ever had on the label in 1966, when Aretha just suddenly decided to be herself, or when they actually had people like Jerry Wexler letting her be herself on Atlantic Records. I should mention now, before we move on, that you are listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. I'm Tom Ryan. We're here every Wednesday and Friday at 5. We take phone calls. If you'd like to call us and tell us your opinion on anything that we're playing, we'll be happy to hear from you. The number here at the station, 516-572-7440, if you wish to reach us. Today we are discussing some of the better hit singles from the Summer of Love. Everybody always talks about it. It's become so legendary, this Summer of Love thing.
Because it will never happen again.
Right. Well,
because now it's going to be the Summer of Hate.
Well, you know, I mean,
Summer of Bombs.
I could be sarcastic about it and say, you know, any year could be special for what it is. But the fact of the matter is 1967 was significantly different than most other years. The reason is because it was a transitional year. If you go to before 1967, there's an incredible innocence, really, to what was happening in popular music up until 1966. And look at the Beatles. I mean, they were releasing Rubber Soul and A Hard Day's Night and Help, you know. But all of a sudden, by 1967, they're releasing Sgt. Pepper. You know, everything, that's significantly different. Yeah. And everybody else started to follow suit. It was a matter of making album tracks, making a mature statement, allowing artistry to creep into your music rather than just trying to do what was popular, appealing to an older teenager perhaps rather than to the teeny boppers. All of this began to change, and by 1968 it changed again because it became kind of the opposite. It began to get dark. Things that, you know, the Summer of Love kind of, I don't want to say it became the Summer of Hate like you said, Heidi, but I mean, by this 1968, think of it this way: the Beatles put out the White Album. You know, bands like Steppenwolf were now popular, and that's a far cry from what was happening just 2 years earlier. That wouldn't have even fit in the Summer of Love.
I like that you said far cry in reference to Steppenwolf.
Oh.
But I digress.
No, actually, that I see what you're going for there.
Move on.
But for all those reasons, I mean, 1967 is sort of caught in the middle between these two extremes on either side of it. So it really is a transitional year. And right in the middle of this came out one of the biggest funk hits of all time. James Brown releases Cold Sweat. Normally it's edited. Of course, the hit single is edited down to about 3 minutes. And it's great as a hit single. It reached number 7 as a hit single. But even better is the full-length album track. So I'm just going to let James be James. And we will digress a little bit from our policy of playing singles for James Brown. Here's the full-length version of Cold Sweat.
About your James Brown. James Brown.
James Brown.
I feel good.
When you think of the Summer of Love, you normally don't think of James Brown, but there's a song that marked a significant shift in what he was doing as well. And, I mean, what an artist. I'm always amazed when I look at the list of hits that this guy has. You go through the Billboard book of hit singles, and he takes up like three full pages. Let's see now, 1967, the summer of 1967, Cold Sweat became a number 7 hit for him. And like I said, it was a significant change because his biggest hit before that was I Got You back in 1965. So you hear there's a difference going on right there. You got that one chord groove thing going on. That's the birth of funk right there. That's funk music. And funk, of course, you could say it's the birth of rap with that track, pretty much with the rhythm track and what's going on there. Just astounding the amount of work done by James Brown. We dedicated a show to him a while back, of course, when he had passed away. And
yep.
I remember doing that.
I wish we had that clip.
Yes, right? Yes, that was very funny.
Living in America.
James being interviewed when he was a little bit less than lucid. It was very strange.
Really?
Remind you, you're listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. We're here Wednesdays and Fridays at 5 p.m., and today we are looking at music.
Hitting them hard.
Hitting them hard in GC. Looking at the music.
Did we even hear that?
No, the summer of 1967.
Say it one more time for Brett.
That's okay. I think we can move on. I got one more funky track I want to play. Actually, the word funky is right in the title, so I guess you can't say that James Brown invented funk if this next track is called The Funky Broadway. A funky songs in a row right there. Aretha Franklin with Baby I Love You, followed by James Brown doing Cold Sweat, the full-length version.
Funkerific.
And of course, Wilson Pickett with Funky Broadway. Wilson and Aretha Franklin were both working with Atlantic Records. So that's where a lot of that funky stuff was coming from, doing all this Muscle Shoals sort of thing that was going on down there with these great musicians.
Muscle Shoals was for sale not too long ago.
Right. Yeah, the studio was that. The entire studio, I believe. Now, The thing is, though, when you think of the Summer of Love, most people aren't thinking, unfortunately, they're not thinking of the South, or usually not. They're not thinking of Muscle Shoals. Most of the time, you're thinking of California and San Francisco and wearing flowers in your hair and all that stuff and the Monterey Pop Festival.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what inspired this next track, which is, for me, this is my great miss or my bad hit. Haven't had that for a while. The song that I think more or less is like one of the more ridiculous songs of the era. Eric Burdon and the Animals. The guy did some good work, of course. And of course, during the British invasion, their version of House of the Rising Sun was very influential. And they've released some great singles. Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. We've Got to Get Out of This Place. It's My Life. All great songs. By 1967, though, Eric Burdon was a displaced hippie trying to find a place where he could more or less fit in with the American scene that was developing in California. He eventually ended up joining the band War, stayed with them for a short period, long enough to record the song Spill the Wine, which is pretty cool. A little weird, but pretty cool. Until War more or less tired of dealing with Eric Burdon, and he was booted from the band, and War continued without him and actually became a better band. But that's no reflection on Eric Burdon. It's just a fact, how great War became later on.
Right.
But at this period, he still is with, technically anyway, by name, with the Animals. And he decided that he would write a song about how groovy it was to live in San Francisco. And I just find this song to be truly funny. I just think it's really one of the most like flat-out dumb songs I've ever heard in my life lyrically. And it's just...
You are heartless.
You know what it sounds like to me?
Cruel.
You know, like, when you that image of a guy wearing, like, a soup can around his neck. And, you know, like Dick Shawn, you know, auditioning for the part in Springtime for Hitler.
That type of a character.
Okay. This is what Eric Burdon sounds like in this song to me.
Faux hippie.
Exactly. Take that image and listen to this song and tell me what you think. Here's Eric Burdon and allegedly the Animals with San Franciscan Nights.
This following program is dedicated to the city and people of San Francisco, who may not know it, but they are beautiful, and so is their city. This is a very personal song, so if the viewer cannot understand it, particularly those of you who are European residents, save up all your bread and fly Translove Airways to San Francisco, USA. Then maybe you'll understand the song. It will be worth it. If not for the sake of this song, but for the sake of your own peace of mind.
Strobe lights beam, create streams. Walls move, minds do too. On a warm San Franciscan night. Old child, young child, feel alright. On a warm San Franciscan night. Angels sing. Harley Davidson's tree on a warm San Francisco night. Old angel, young angel, feel all right on a warm San Francisco night. I wasn't born there, perhaps I'll die there. There's no place left to go. San Francisco. Cops face is filled with hate. Heavens above, he's on a street called love. When will they ever learn? Old cop, young cop,
feel all right on a warm San Francisco night. The children are cool, they don't raise fools. It's an American dream, includes Indians too.
Honestly, I mean, have you seen the movie The Producers?
Yes.
The Mel Brooks movie, the original Mel Brooks movie, which is one of the most classic comedies of all time. And there's that scene where Dick Shawn walks in and goes, is this the, you know, where are you going to be doing your auditions for Boomerang, baby? And then, and then he's got these girls with like finger cymbals on their hands in back of him. And I believe he is wearing a Campbell's soup can. And he starts to sing about this love song about flowers and the power of a flower. And then he starts singing, and then a cop comes along and he's with the man, takes my flower in the garbage can. It's so funny. And I swear to God, I'm hearing Eric Burdon sing that track. I'm like, what's the difference? That,
really?
Dick Shawn could have sang that track and it would have been just as good.
Maybe that's what influenced.
Sounds like it was.
I don't get it, though. Why? Like,
incredible.
Why would you do that to yourself? Why would you have
hard to take
angels flying on leather wings?
Of course, the Hell's Angel reference there, the Hell's Angels.
The guy, I mean, like, when he's singing, like, it sounds like he, you know, when he's singing in his head, he's probably like, man, this is going to reach to so many people and it's going to touch so many people with my words.
Like that whole intro thing that he does, which has nothing to do with the song. It's just,
get ready, this song will rock you. You have no idea.
It's incredible.
Like trans love airwaves. Oh, groovy.
Go to San Francisco, and you'll understand.
Unbelievable.
I guess
it?
Back then, though, like, really, you know, is. If you were an uber hippie, you had to say that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but look at all the great music that was coming out during the Summer of Love. And then there's this. I mean, that is just, there's nothing about that song that is going to be inspiring. Nothing.
He was Squaresville, man.
Meanwhile, to make a similar point, here's another guy who also was part of the whole British invasion thing in 64 and 65. As part of a band that played a lot of almost nothing but American blues, almost exactly like the Animals did, came to America at almost the exact same time to figure out a way to start a solo career. But in this instance, ended up in New York rather than in California and was struggling to see if he could find a recording contract and unfortunately got involved with like a mob-based label called Bang Records.
Of course.
What a bizarre coincidence that is. Released one album and pretty much tried to tie the guy down to a contract for life. What he had to do to get out of this contract.
Can I put my hand up? Thumbs. I think I know who this is.
Absolutely unbelievable.
Pick me.
Pick you, Heidi. Who are we talking about?
Van.
Yes, ma'am. Van Morrison had left the band Them, came to New York to begin his solo career, got signed to Bang Records, and did record this one album and got paid virtually nothing and was given no artistic freedom at all.
He kind of looks like a mobster with that hat.
Well, at the time, he was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
He was just a curly-haired, you know, he's about 20.
Hi, I'm
at this time. Well, hardly that. But he came into New York and had a bag of songs with them, and they recorded a few of them. And you know, people find this hard to believe, but this was his debut single as a solo artist after leaving the band Them and writing songs like Gloria, which pretty much changed the world. I mean, how many bands do Gloria and don't associate that with Van Morrison? That's what he was doing when he was with Them. And now here he is pretty much in this like hippified America trying to figure out how he's going to fit in. And he comes up with this gem that you've probably heard
a million
probably
times.
Three or four times today already. It's Van Morrison with Brown Eyed Girl.
Jumping in the midst
Oh, right. Of course, there's Van Morrison with Brown Eyed Girl. Now it's the song that he's most associated with, I imagine, as a solo artist.
I know. I didn't like him initially because I didn't like the song because it was so overplayed, in my opinion.
You can't blame him for that, for writing a great single. But a good something that I do want to point out on this song, though, we had just heard a song that was edited. There was a line in the original song that Bang Records considered offensive and perhaps non-commercial. So they edited in a line from an earlier verse to replace the bit that they considered offensive. All that he says in the original song, in fact, he talks about making love in the green grass behind the stadium with you. They're like, no way. So let's hear the original, and then maybe we can go back and listen to how they change it, because it's kind of laughable. You'll hear that. I mean, you're going to hear this edit so blatantly once I pointed out that you'll probably never hear the song with the edit again.
So this is the original version that we're going to hear right now.
Yeah, this is the original version without the edit. Let's play that, and we'll try to see if we can cue up the edited version again.
Word.
So hard to find my way. Now that I'm all on my own. I saw you just the other day. My, you have grown. Cast my memory back there, Lord. Sometimes I'm overcome thinking about making love in the green grass behind the stadium with you.
Right, now that was perfectly smooth, and you hear him singing it the way that he wrote it. I can't, you know, sometimes I'm overcome thinking about making love in the green grass behind the stadium with you. Now, how many songs do you hear about making love? I mean,
every day.
And sure. Even in the 50s, Perry Como sang about it. Frank Sinatra would sing about it. There was, obviously, the phrase could mean virtually anything.
It's but only natural.
Right. Birds do it, you know.
They sure do.
It's just so weird that they would have find that line. So what they basically did to fix it for single release is they took a line from the very first verse and they just, I mean, without any artistic idea toward artistry at all, they just rip it in. You're going to hear this right now. It's going to be so obvious where the line was, sometimes I'm overcome thinking about making love in the green grass. Wait for that. When you hear making, you know, sometimes I'm overcome thinking about, listen for the edit. Here's the edited version again. In the line, laughing and a running, hey hey, which is, and you hear the edit,
yeah,
like a cold cut. It's just like bam. It's like wow, the timbre of his voice is even different.
Yes,
you know,
that's funny.
It's incredible. Ah, the things that they had to do back then in 1967. And now, when you find that song, by the way, it's very hard to find that song without the edit.
Really?
For some reason, most of the digital versions of that song that exist on Van's Greatest Hits album, the one that seems to be salvaged almost across the board is the edited version.
Well, I wouldn't want my kids to hear it.
No. Well, there you go. That's why they're letting people hear it. Only the edited version.
Make war,
version.
Not love.
I bet Bush is behind it somehow.
Imagine they have to put, when you think about how you have to put these stickers on songs for the things that are said, and they're editing that.
Yeah,
back then, it's incredible. What a difference!
Well, the same reason why you cannot see breast nudity, but you can see guns and people being shot and killed.
Well, you could talk about, you know, lovely lady humps and all that stuff.
and London bridges,
London bridges,
whatever the heck that might be.
Down, down.
That's like
my.
If you compare those, how extreme is it? You know, like.
It's amazing. And even for its time, I think that was a bit extreme that they would worry about editing that
or
line.
But don't funk with my heart. I mean, come on. And that's all Black Eyed Peas and Fergie right there.
Yeah, exactly. That's just one artist we're talking about.
Lurgy.
Well, you know, when we last covered singles Lugie. From the Summer of Love, we covered July. And a number one single from the middle of the Summer of Love was the Beatles' hit, of course, All You Need Is Love. Well, by August, it sold enough copies that the B-side began to get some attention because it was a non-LP track, you see. The Beatles did not release this song on an album. It wouldn't come out on an album until Christmas when they put out the compilation Magical Mystery Tour. So, since it charted in its own right at number 34, it was one of my picks for one of the cooler singles. Not one of the best Beatles songs of all time, but you know what? Any Beatles single is a good single. So here's the B-side of All You Need Is Love. Here's Baby, You're a Rich Man. Well, that pretty much ends it for our show today. You know what? When I hear that song now, I think that is one of the better Beatles singles. I mean, it might not be one of the best melodies, but the production is so cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
You hear that, like that, those great sound effects on that whole track? It was pretty awesome and
just
great for the Summer of Love. Very
just
weird.
The piano,
and
I think, carries that song perfectly.
Yeah. As usual, the Beatles, like, not only being innovative then, but sounding innovative today. Incredible. 40 years later. Absolutely fabulous. Well, that does it for our show. I hope you enjoyed it. We will be back on Friday with our coverage of the Beach Boys. I intend to be on time this time, so we don't need a fake version of Tom and Heidi to show up on Friday.
I hope, but that was fun.
It was fun. But I think we'll be here at 5. We'll make a point of it. Meanwhile, we've got a little time left, so we'll say goodbye with the A side of the track.
Okay.
Hope to hear you, see you all again on Fridays. Take care. I'm Tom Ryan with Heidi Morales. This has been American Hit Radio. Mike Tejan, great job behind the board.
Of course.
And we'll see y'all soon. Take care now.
Don't forget to check out the website.
Oh, sure. AmericanHitNetwork.com, AmericanHitRadio.com, or
and
Shut Up and Listen.
S-H-A-D-D-U-P.
I bet they're all on it right now.
Yep. Just wondering why are they saying that if we already know. Take care, folks.
Nothing you Nothing.